Hello and welcome to Iowa Ed Chat Live. We are continuing to bring you the latest educational news each month, and we are pleased to be able to connect with you tonight. We have two very special guests this evening. Jimmy Casas and Jeff Zoll are here to chat, and we will introduce them in just a few minutes. You can connect with Jimmy and Jeff on Twitter, and Jimmy is at Casas underscore Jimmy, and Jeff is at Jeff at Jeff underscore Zoll. As you can see, tonight's chat features a live video stream, and we will be taking questions from you, our audience members. Please submit your questions via our hashtag. That's hashtag IAEdChat, and we will monitor this feed. So please do not hesitate to share your thoughts and your questions with Jimmy and Jeff tonight. We will get this show on our podcast later tonight. So if you have not checked us out on iTunes or on Podomatic, do that. Please subscribe to us and give us a rating. We really appreciate that feedback. We are going to get this thing rolling with a couple of introductions. I will start. My name is Dan Butler. I am a principal of Epworth Elementary School in the Western Dubuque School District, and pleased to be able to be with you tonight. And I'm going to kick it to my partner in crime, Andrea Townsley.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Iowa Ed Chat Live. My name is Andrea Townsley. I am a former elementary teacher turned instructional coach, and now I am a school improvement consultant at Grantwood AEA in Cedar Rapids. I am excited to have our two guests on tonight, and I have a privilege to tell you a little bit about Jimmy Casas. So Jimmy is a senior fellow for the International Center for Leadership in Education, providing keynotes, workshops, and executive coaching for educators all over the country. Jimmy served 22 years as a school leader. He currently serves as an adjunct professor for Drake University, teaching a graduate course on educational leadership. He's also the co-founder and CEO of Connect EDD with Jeff Zoll, an educational leadership company that is aimed at organizing world-class professional learning conferences and professional development services for educators across the country. Jimmy is the author of three books, including his latest release, Culturize. You can learn more about Jimmy by visiting jimmycasas.com.
All righty. It's my pleasure to introduce my friend, Jeff Zoll. Jeff is a lifelong teacher, learner, and leader. During Jeff's distinguished career in education, he has served in a variety of roles, most recently as Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning with Deerfield Public Schools, District 109 in Deerfield, Illinois. Jeff also served as a teacher and coach in the state of Georgia for many years before moving into school administration. Jeff has also taught graduate courses at the university level in the area of assessment research and program evaluation. He is the author, co-author of many books, including What Connected Educators Do Differently, Start Right Now, Teach and Lead for Excellence, Improving Your School One Week at a Time, and Leading Professional Learning, Tools to Connect and Empower Teachers, and most recently, Education Right Now and The Principled Principle. You can learn more about Jeff by visiting jeffrey.zoll.blogspot.com. Welcome to Iowa Ed Chat Live, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and get us kicked off. You guys can tell us a little bit about your background in education, anything that we didn't cover in your awesome bios.
Well, first thing I want to say is, first of all, thank you very much to both of you. I know Jeff and I are pretty excited about being on here tonight. Dan, I need to let you know that that intro, when you said Jimmy and you mentioned my name and then the Twitter handle, my mother would be extremely proud of you. So I want to give a shout out to Mama Casas because you said Casas underscore Jimmy. I don't even know if you noticed that. You didn't say Casas, you said Casas. So kudos to you, my friend.
It's fully intentional. I've eaten at Mama Casas' house. It's fully intentional. I'll take credit when it's due, man. Thank you.
That was very impressive. So, but in all seriousness, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Yes, just, you know, it's interesting, right? Because I grew up in Muscatine and then went to the school, University of Iowa, and did my student teaching actually in Iowa City, Iowa. And then had an opportunity to go back there later as an assistant principal. And so love my beloved Hawks, always will, always have. So I'm representing tonight, Iowa Hawkeyes, and but also like the Cyclones too. So we root for them as well as the UNI Panthers, right, Danny? So, and then started my career in Milwaukee Public Schools, which was to me really where it all began in terms of changing the way I looked at school leadership, school culture, just working in inner city, and just had the opportunity to be mentored by some really wonderful leaders. So anyway, and then I had the good fortune of spending the last 14 years as the principal of Bettendorf High School. So proud to be an Iowan and proud to be an Iowa educator. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Andrea, Dan, I'll echo Jimmy's thanks. Thank you for the opportunity to chat with you guys tonight and the Iowa EdChat community. Awfully grateful to be here. And the introduction covers a lot of it. I sometimes say that one thing that's a little unique about me is I taught for 18 years before moving into administration. And my first year of teaching, I taught first grade. And my 18th year of teaching, I taught high school English and taught a little bit of everything in between. So, and then my admin career kind of mirrored that, kind of being an administrator at the high school level and then the elementary school level and then the middle school level. So I like all levels of K through 12, and I'm just blessed to say I've had a career where I've been able to interact with kids of all ages and teachers in all grade levels. So thankful to be here. Thank you so much. Let's get started.
You got it. So you both have written extensively about school culture, and we're going to talk about that quite a bit this evening. If you wouldn't mind, talk about the importance of this and how each person in the school can contribute to a positive school culture.
Okay, I'll start off with that one, Danny. A couple things come to mind when I think of school culture, and Jeff and I have had this conversation a lot. And one of those things, I think it's just, I think for me, it starts with just examining our behaviors and how we behave every day in our school environments. And then our ability to influence others, right? And how we behave and how we treat one another, how we take care of one another. And then the idea also is how much do we invest not only in each other, but in our students and our school community and so forth. So these, there's all these little compartments, right? When you start thinking about school culture. And when I think about the idea of culturizing our schools, that to me means like I see us as community builders, right? Each one of us, every day that we go to into an environment is an opportunity to begin to cultivate and build these communities. And then how do we begin to examine our organizations and really truly look at them and say, are there any communities currently that haven't been built that would be really great if we could really invest and really do something and inspire people in terms of motivating them and giving them hope that our schools can be so much more? And so when I begin to look at things like that, in terms of these different communities, whether you're a classroom teacher or a paraeducator or secretary, I mean, first of all, everybody has talents in the organization, everybody has strengths. And I think it's our responsibility as individuals is to create and build these relationships where people really get to know each other. So we get to know those strengths and talents. And then that way we can come together and hopefully share a common vision, right? And have some discussion and have feedback. So it's this ability to bring people together. And if you're a classroom teacher, it's the ability to bring students together because everybody in the organization really is a leader, right? We really are. And so how do we continue to cultivate more leaders in our buildings and our organizations? And the idea of culturizing our schools is really, to me, is how do we move people and inspire people to be more and do more than they ever thought possible? So that's kind of how I look at the whole idea of culturizing our schools. And you know, of course, I talk about four principles, and I do think it's important that we all work from a core fundamental, you know, core principleship, right? What is in here? What is in my soul? What's in my heart? Where do I lead from? Where do I teach from? Where do I really focus and begin to invest in other people? So, you know, whether you're talking about championing for kids, which to me is really about the three R's, is the relationships and those three tiers of relationships. So it isn't just getting to know the kids, but allowing them to get to know you. And more importantly, creating these environments where kids and adults really get to know one another. Because when that begins to happen, then you create this empathy, right? And then when you create empathy, people no longer are judging or being critical. And so you really build this caring environment where people support one another. And so then the second principle is for me for expecting excellence, right? Because I do think and I get worried that too often we allow status quo to creep in and then we just begin to accept average. And I just, you know, as we all know, we didn't go into this profession to be average. We went in here to make a difference. We wanted to be great. We want to inspire our kids to be great. But yet somewhere along our path, somewhere along our journey, people begin to get tired. They begin a little weary. They begin tired. And then for whatever reason, it's almost like they lose hope and don't feel like they can make the impact that they originally when they went into the profession thought they could make. And that's what I always worry about is when people get to that point and we never want that to happen. And then You know, finally, how do we carry the banner for one another? How do we carry the banner for our kids, for our organization, for our colleagues? And that's bringing that positive voice every day. And then hopefully inspiring others to go for greatness, because everybody wants to be a part of something great. So how do we become these merchants of hope?
Yeah, Jimmy, I think you raise, you covered that pretty well. Like, and I think the thing I admire about Jimmy when he's talking about culture, and obviously I agree with 100%, is it's got to be the whole school community playing a role in that culture. But Dan, I will say it does start, in my opinion, with the principal. The principal's primary job, I oftentimes say, you know, I'm a big believer in the four C's of 21st century learning. I want to see our kids creating, thinking critically, collaborating, and communicating. Those are four critical C's that I believe in wholeheartedly. But the four C's for a principal, I think, are culture, 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 culture. But if it starts and ends with the principal, the school culture will never be where it needs to be. It does have to start with the principal, and the principal sets that tone. But as Jimmy so eloquently stated, then it's getting the entire school community, every kid, every TA, every staff member, every parent involved in that school culture. And I think the strongest and most positive school cultures I've been around are those where they're aware of what's going right to make it a positive and productive culture, but also professionally and respectfully holding each other accountable when some in the community are behaving. I think Jimmy calls them culture killers, or I call them culture crushers sometimes, because those behaviors will happen. And I think the most positive and productive school cultures are those where it's not always the principal who steps in to address the culture crushing behavior. It's where all of a sudden we all hold each other accountable. Teachers hold teachers accountable. Teachers hold administrators accountable. Parents hold teachers accountable. And it's not a gotcha. It's not a negative. It's actually a positive. It's say, hey, we said this is important to our culture, and I know we slipped right here, but I'm gonna call you on it. And I appreciate that when that happens to me, and I hope others appreciate when I give feedback in that regard too. So it is a community effort, but it's got to start with the principal, but it can't end with the principal. It's got to become a whole school community.
That's awesome. I mean, that's an important distinction that a lot of times are brought up. I mean, it's a lot of times it is. Yes, it starts with the principal, but as you stated there, it can't end there. It's everybody owning that as well. So that was great, great stuff. Way to kick us off, guys. Thank you so much. We do have a question already from Jessica Goodnow, and I'm not sure if you guys can answer this or not, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So Jessica asked, what changes from going state to state have you noticed within different ways of doing business? So like Jeff, you've been in Deerfield in Georgia, and within Illinois, Jimmy, Milwaukee, and also within Iowa. And she had just mentioned, what changes state to state within your positions from Iowa to Milwaukee to Deerfield, Illinois?
You know, Dan, I'll start off, and Jimmy can certainly add in. He's been in every state, I think, too. But I think in my career, I think I've worked in 35 of the 50 states. And sort of a short answer is everything's the same and everything's different, which is a contradiction. And I think education is filled with contradictions. But from every state I've been to, from rural Texas to rural New Mexico to, urban settings, everything's different, yet everything's the same. There's still the same challenges. There's still the same struggles. There's still the same obstacles. But every culture is so unique. And it's a matter of getting to know that culture, the current status is of that culture, and then finding out what to highlight and what to kind of fight against to make it better. I do think, though, there are significant differences. My career in Georgia, I was a middle school principal in Georgia, and I thought that, I was a really effective, successful principal. Our school had done so well. And then I moved to Chicago, and it was just different. You know, we had a great, great staff, a great, great school community, but it was very, very different. And I quickly learned, and this is, ignorant of me, right? I'm being vulnerable here and telling you the mistake I made. I thought, well, gosh, our school had so much success in Georgia. We'll do some of those things in this suburban Chicago school. It's a middle school, about the same amount of kids. And those things didn't work, Dan. Or maybe they would have worked if I would have kind of introduced them differently. Maybe that's on me. But I just thought, oh, we'll just do these things that worked in place A and we'll do it in place B. And that didn't work. So you have to really assess the situation and know that each situation is unique. Having said that, kids are kids, teachers are teachers. It's, you know, I'll go back to, you know, I think we all know Todd Whitaker and respect him. It's about the people, not the programs. So no matter how different the programs are, the people are always the solution and people are always the problem. And it's working with the people in each unique individual setting to make the most of that setting.
Yeah, Dan, when I first heard the question, I took it one way and then Jeff went kind of a different direction with it. So I'm not sure if the question was really meant like with our experience working, like is Milwaukee Public Schools, how is it different than Iowa City? How is Iowa City different than Bettendorf and the school buildings that I actually worked? Or were they relating to, hey, when you travel around the country and you're in different school districts and different schools, how does it look different? So I do agree with Jeff. And I think, you know, I often cheer people because it's interesting, right? We often talk about how kids are so different. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think kids are pretty much the same everywhere. And it doesn't matter what type of kid we're talking about. We're talking about kids who are, you know, struggling in school, or maybe they're high achievers, or, you know, whether demographically, wherever they come from or whatever happens to be their situation. I believe this, that I believe to a kid, every one of their, if they have a problem or they view something in their life that's a problem, it's the biggest problem to them. It doesn't matter, you know, what the situation is. To a kid, it's the biggest problem. And so, you know, when I think of it that way, in terms of what's the biggest issue I see or the similarities, I do agree with Jeff that every community has its own uniqueness to it. But yet when I look at school buildings and I look at what are the most successful school buildings doing, and why can you go into one school and yet demographically and the size of the population, the size of the staff and communities are somewhat similar. So why are they so different? And I think it always comes down to leadership. And this is where I get kind of caught sometimes with people who maybe disagree with me. But I would challenge people, if they really reflected and they really thought about school organizations and why schools are successful and why schools are not successful, I think it always comes down to leadership. I think the biggest issue we face today in public education is ineffective leadership. And I don't necessarily mean at the district central office or at the building level. I just mean leadership in general, whether that's student leadership, it's, you know, teacher leadership. But if you really look at all the issues that happen in schools today, almost every issue is a leadership issue, right? If you take a look at it and start thinking about how we communicate, what does it look like in terms of the conversations we have, how we behave, how we treat one another, how we handle ourselves, how we respond to different situations. These to me are all leadership issues in terms of how we build our own capacity and how we conduct ourselves. So that's what I see pretty consistently, but yet at the same time, I think pretty much across the board, whether it's Alabama or whether it's California or New Jersey or Minnesota or Iowa, pretty much the same issues we're dealing with in schools today, right? They're pretty consistent across the board.
You know, that question from the audience is a good segue into our next question that talks about, in Start Right Now, you guys use the words leader and teacher synonymously. So can you guys explain the connection of leading and teaching?
Yeah, Andrea, you know, we wrote the subtitle for this book before we wrote the title. We had the subtitle long in advance. Todd and Jimmy and I, we've all been in the business for more years than we care to admit sometimes. I think we're veteran educators. And we wanted to kind of write about what we thought excellent teachers and excellent administrators had in common, because we thought really it's one and the same. And again, we use the word leaders, not administrators. But in the opening to that book, we kind of share our belief that an excellent teacher leads and an excellent leader still teaches. Those terms, and I think even biblically, it's a synonym, right, of teacher is leader. It's literally a synonym, I think. And if it's not literally a synonym, it certainly is figuratively to us. And I kind of always say that I'm a huge collector of leadership quotes, and I'm always adding to my store of leadership quotes. And I defy anyone to find a single leadership quote where if you replace the word leader with teacher or the word leadership with teaching, that quote would not be just as apt, if not more so. The job of teacher by its very definition is the job of a leader. And I taught for 18 years and I always kind of hated the phrase, and you hear it all the time. And I probably said it myself, I'm just a teacher. And there were some times where I was guilty of putting myself in that. I'd say, I'm not going to do that. I'm just a teacher. And it makes me kind of cringe. I know for the most part of my 18-year career, I certainly didn't consider myself just a teacher. I can't think of a more inapt name for the role of the most important job in our country, that of teacher. So if you are a teacher, you are way more than a classroom teacher. You are a leader of young people and you are a leader of your colleagues. And it kind of gets back to that whole culture thing. Until we have all teachers leading in some way, shape, or form in the school, we're never going to have the culture we need.
I was struggling to find my mute button there, Andrea, so forgive me there. So I don't really have much more to add. I do agree, what Jeff shared and echo what he talked about. And again, him and I have had a lot of discussion along with Todd as well. And as we sit around and talk about these crazy ideas and thoughts and things happening in education today. But Jeff mentions the whole idea is that teachers are leaders and leaders are teachers. And that's just how we have to see ourselves. Everybody has the capacity to lead, to ask our school leaders, right? By definition, our school leaders, our principals and assistant principals, to lead these large organizations on their own and think that somehow that leadership was meant to be a committee of one, right? These schools just aren't as successful as schools that have understood that the key is really building capacity, to build these communities where everyone really sees themselves as a leader, which means they're willing to take initiative, right? They can do this without fear of repercussion, without fear of taking risk. But it also takes a strong leader and an effective leader to build that capacity in the sense of, one of the things I talk about often is that people are always asking for permission, then we haven't done a very good job of building, leadership capacity. Because the reason they ask for permission is because they themselves either don't have the confidence or we haven't instilled in them the understanding that, look, sometimes you have to trust your instincts as a leader and trust yourself and believe in yourself and have the confidence. It doesn't mean we don't run things by people and sometimes they get a different perspective and, hey, I just want to check on something. But oftentimes, we can't keep going back to the same individual and just exhaust them constantly and needing their time. And it's because we as classroom teachers haven't done a very good job of building our capacity with our young kids and our students. And we as adults and leaders, school leaders and district leaders, haven't done a very good job of building capacity with our teachers. So at the end of the day, the bottom line is, we're all responsible for the culture and climate of our schools. And that's our responsibility to create those environments that people truly believe that they can lead.
So we're going to stick with Start Right Now for this next question. And Start Right Now is divided into four standards for excellence. Know the way, show the way, go the way, and grow each day. Briefly talk through this framework, if you wouldn't mind, for our listeners, guys.
Yeah, Dan, that does form the basis of the four main chapters of the book. It's a 6-chapter book. We've got an intro and a closing, but the four chapters are about those four behaviors that we think both excellent teachers and excellent leaders exhibit. And we got the idea originally from a John Maxwell quote. He had three of those four in a different order. We changed the order and we added the one grow each day. But we also kind of align these with the PLC foundational principles of mission, vision, values, and goals. And so we align knowing the way with mission because it starts with knowing your why. Mission's why do you exist? And then we move on to showing the way and we align that with vision. To us, vision answers the question, what do you hope to become? So in that chapter, we write about how important it is for individual educators to know, what they hope to become and their role. Then we move on to going the way. And of course, that's all about modeling, which is so powerfully important, whether we're in the classroom or in the principal's office or in the district office, going the way we want others to go. And we align that with the PLC concept of values. And values answers the question, how must we behave on a daily basis in order to fulfill our mission and eventually achieve our vision? And those three PLC concepts are kind of longer term ones that can stand for 3 to 5 years. But then our fourth chapter is growing each day. All those things we do. I think one of the most important things excellent teachers and leaders do to make them excellent, frankly, is they know they're never good enough and they're going to do their very best today. And that's all they can do is their best today. But tomorrow they're going to do even better. They're going to get better each and every day. And we align that with the PLC concept of goals. And of course, goals answers the question, which steps and when. So that's kind of the broad framework of the what we call our framework for excellence. And we align those to the PLC concepts of mission, vision, values, and goals. And within each of those four chapters, Dan, then we try to share 8 in each chapter, ideas, anecdotes, stories, examples of what knowing the way, showing the way, going the way, and growing each day looks like in the excellent classrooms and the excellent schools we've had the good fortune to visit over the course of our careers.
Yeah, Dan, I really don't have a lot more to add to that. I mean, I think Jeff's
the last time Jimmy said he doesn't have a lot more to add, he talked for 5 or 8 minutes, I think, Dan.
That's because people are on here to listen to me, not listen to you. Maybe that's why I feel sorry for them. So we have to remember that always. So you could tell that we spend a lot of time together, can't you, Andrea? Can't you, Dan? So he always, one thing I've noticed about Jeff, though, he always takes the first hit on me. He tries to take my excellence away. So every now and then I fall into that, but I try to rise above. So I'll try to rise above again tonight. So now we're just teasing. No, in all seriousness, though, but, you know, it's interesting because when you look at those four pillars, we struggled a little bit with the whole idea of, you know, you have know the way, show the way. The show the way is the hardest one for us to really define and really explain that one, because we typically want to go right into the modeling piece. And to us, that's really the go the way foundation. So, you know, Jeff says it really well, and he talks about how we must behave, right? This is the way we must behave in our organizations. And so it's always interesting to me when we go back and look at that, the four pillars and start right now. And so Jeff and I actually have been talking a lot about not just the things that we should start doing, but what are the things we should stop doing? So we've been having a lot of discussion about that lately as well. Sometimes that's more important, right? What are the things we should quit doing, not just keep doing?
Maybe an upcoming book.
Yeah.
Stop right now.
Maybe.
All right. About 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, you hosted your first What Great Educators Do Differently conference in Chicago and have facilitated many more since. What would a participant expect at a What Great Educators Do Differently or WGEDD? You can find a hashtag with an active hashtag there. What could they expect at that conference?
Well, so here's a couple things. Number one, you know, when we started, we had this idea to create these conferences. One of the things that we really valued was, again, I'm going to go back to where we started. This is how do we build these communities? And, you know, both of us had been to many conferences and, you know, whether they're large conferences or our state conferences or national conferences and so forth. But one of the things when we'd go to these conferences, I think the thing that we always walked away with was the idea of feeling connected. Like we'd walk out of there thinking, you know, the idea of connecting with these people and having these conversations. And I think that's where social media has really changed the conference look. That now when you go to these conferences, you know people when you get there, even though you've never necessarily met them face to face. And maybe you look forward to going to the conferences because, you know, you've been having dialogue, you've been interacting, conversation, you've been going back and forth on social media, whether that's, you know, Voxer, or whether it's Twitter, or whether it's Instagram or whatever. So, but that whole idea of what great educators do differently is we started thinking is, so it doesn't matter what role you have in education. We try to flatten the hierarchy. So whether you're a secretary or a classroom teacher, or whether you're a bus driver, or whatever role you play in the organization, everybody has an opportunity to make an impact. And so when we looked at the conferences, that we really wanted to keep it pretty general in terms of what is it the great educators do differently and how do we encourage people to be different and take risk and be, you know, not necessarily disruptors that we blow up the system, right? Because we understand that, I mean, it is difficult to go in and blow up the system in this day and age. You know, people don't want to lose their jobs because you're pushing so hard, but how can we gently disrupt the system? How can we encourage people and model to people that we can be different in some ways and develop these organizations that just look different than what we're used to. So this idea of connectivity. So we wanted a smaller conference where people would walk away and it actually felt like the entire time they were there, they actually connected with other people. We didn't want the typical conference where people go with individuals they already know, hang out with people they already know, and then leave and still never really met anybody new when they were at the conference. So how could we create an environment where the speakers and the presenters were really connected to the guests, right? Like they stayed around and they engaged people in conversation, not just during the conference, but our willingness to stay connected with people long after the conference. And I think that's what makes us a little different. And the one thing that Jeff and I continue just to be amazed at is for all the conferences we held, and we've done 9 now, is that when people leave, consistently people have shared, as Jeff and I, because Jeff and I intentionally, we try to interact with every individual there as they're arriving, as they're leaving during the conference, but we continually hear, and it makes us feel good that people say that's one of the best conferences they've ever attended. And we've heard that consistent message. And so I think that's where what people can expect is to truly find genuine people who really truly model the behaviors that we want to see repeated, right, in our educators, that they're invested in people, that they care about people, more importantly, that they're willing to support every one of us in this crazy profession we call teaching and learning, right, because we know how difficult it is and how taxing it can be. So it's kind of a getaway, but yet it's inspiring. I guess that would be the one word that I would say is that people leave inspired.
Yeah, I would, along those lines, Jimmy, when she asked what would they expect, I think they would experience passion from every speaker there, and I think our conferences are second to none. And the speakers we've had there, we've had probably, 40 speakers over the course of those 9 conferences, and we've had Todd Whitaker and George Kuros and Pernille Rip and Kayla Delzer, and, you know, it could go on and on, Tom Murray, Joe Sanfilippo, some of the very, very, very best in the business. But I think what really, really, really makes these special are the attendees, and the passion of the attendees, and just the intermixing and the interaction of speakers and attendees. And it's not the speakers speaking to the attendees, it's the speakers interacting with the attendees. And again, just a passionate, passionate 1 or 2 day event every time we've done one of these. And it has been real rewarding. Jimmy and I are not the best business people in the world, but we leave those events thinking we've run a pretty darn good conference with the comments we get on the way out. And it's been a real blessing to be a part of that. So it's been fun. We look forward to many more.
Hey, Dan and Andrew, I actually just tweeted out here just a little bit ago. I was looking at the registration for Nashville, and we're really excited because right now we're right at the cusp of 300 people, and we're still about 7 weeks away. But what's really cool always is to see where the people are coming from. So we have people coming from Kentucky and Alabama and Missouri and where else did I see? Upstate New York, somewhere in those areas. But 11 states right now are represented that are coming to What Great Educators Do Differently in Nashville. And then right after that, the following week, we'll go right to Houston. And that's our second one in Houston. We just did one in October, and we had a great turnout there. And we're looking at going right back here in April again. We're pretty excited about that, obviously. And then we just recently did Virginia. So we're going to be going to Virginia as well in August, and we're excited about that. And we continue to look at different sites and different locations for these conferences. So just feel very, very blessed to feel, you know, people continue to support our conferences. But again, I think that people just really are feel connected to the presenters, and they do such a fantastic job. But Jeff is right. It's really the attendees that make the conference, and the energy that they bring, and the passion they bring, and just their love for learning.
Jimmy, the other thing is that when we talk about the attendees, it always, I think, has been a winner for the conference. Has been, we've got a fair amount of teachers, classroom teachers, and administrators in various roles. So it's almost like 50-50. And that's maybe different than some conferences, but it works to our advantage where school administrators and classroom teachers are working together and learning together and listening together and sharing together. So it's been kind of neat in that regard, I think, too.
Yeah, most definitely, guys. And, you know, having the opportunity to go to 2 of those, I went to the one in Chicago, your first one, and then in Kansas City last year. It just tremendous. And the small numbers are great. You keep it to a maximum number of attendees that you can get that close personal connection with the people that you're going to the conference with, but also those presenters. They're so accessible, and you've got some dynamite people in that field. So you've got a whole bunch of them coming up that we are going to announce a little bit later. And we've been told that coming to Iowa, it sounds like in September too, which we will announce a little bit later, which is awesome. Awesome, awesome. So looking forward to talking more about WGEDD, definitely. So next question here, moving forward. Over the summer, Jeff organized a writing retreat for Education Right Now, a book highlighting 10 issues in education today. Talk about this process and what readers would expect from this collaborative project.
Hey, Dan, thank you for asking about that. It's hard to rank things in a 35-year career in education, but this might rank as one of my most rewarding single experiences in those 35 years for a number of different reasons. 1, just the collaboration of it. 2, nobody was doing this for any money whatsoever. The proceeds go to a nonprofit organization that's a real passion of mine. It's called the Will to Live Foundation, started by John Troutwine, a former high school classmate of mine, played Major League Baseball for the Red Sox, and his son suddenly and unexpectedly committed suicide while in high school. And John has devoted his life since then for suicide awareness for teens. And it's just a great, great organization. I encourage anybody who's listening to look it up. But so any royalties from that book go to the Will to Live Foundation. But it's just something, Joe Mazza had the idea, and Joe is one of my best friends. But like most things with Joe, he has the idea and somebody else has to put it into play. And I think I got the wheels going with that, and Routledge has partnered with us a little bit. And we just invited 8 other people, and we had this crazy idea that in 48 hours, 10 people would get together, Joe and myself and 8 others, and we would write a full-length book in 48 hours, with each person contributing approximately 5,000 words. And so Routledge said, yeah, let's do this, and we invited 8 people that we respected. We had a really great first team. Star Saxton, Kayla Delzer, Tom Murray, Tony Sinanis, Bob Dylan, Amber Thiemann, others, Joe Sanfilippo. But anyway, it was a great, great team. And the funny thing was, you know, a few weeks before, I think it was Tom Murray emailed me and said, hey Zoll, what are we writing about? And I said, you know, we haven't really decided. Let's talk about it when we get there. And I'm not sure we'll do it the same way this summer, Dan, but we've got the second iteration of that happening again in Chicago this summer. But when we got there, we decided that the overarching theme of the book would be change. And then each person in the group of 10 would take one aspect to write about in education that relates to change. So I took the first chapter and we said we would call each chapter Changing the Way We Think About Blank. And so I wrote the first chapter and I called mine Changing the Way We Think About Change. And I think the second chapter, Tony Snana says, I'm gonna do learning, changing the way we think about learning. And every person kind of, you know, so we spent the whole, we only had 48 hours, and I think we spent the first 3 hours arguing about what everybody would write about. But we did have the idea of the overarching theme of change. And I think the end product was kind of a cohesive book, even though for the most part, we would come together but then we'd go write separately. And Jimmy was gracious enough to kind of hang out as an observer, and he wrote the afterword for the book, just kind of watching us work and collaborate on this project. But it was both an individual and a collaborative work, and we had scheduled in there like writing accountability partner time, where we rotated around, and I might have 15 minutes to talk to Tony Sinanis about where I was on mine and where he was on his, and just the whole thing. And then there's fun times at night. We'd go out to dinner and have a great time, then we'd come back the next day and know we had to produce 5,000 words. So it was harder than one might think, at least for me, and I consider myself a fairly accomplished writer, and boy, I was struggling to get that done in 48 hours. But at the end of the day, everybody left there having submitted a 5,000, roughly, word chapter. And then Lauren Davis and I kind of spent the next month or two just editing that and putting it all together. And it came out in December. And that's our plan from now on every year, Dan. We'll get a different group together. Joe and I will be the editors again this year. But we'll get we've already got the team named, and then we're going to coincide that with the principals conference every summer, this summer with the NASSP event in Chicago, and hope to have the book out every year at December. So really fun, rewarding time, and it's for a good cause.
Hey Dan, I have to tell Jeff I'm a little hurt because he had shared with me that I was one of the most rewarding experiences of his entire life getting to work with me, but now apparently that's changed. So that's okay. I'll let this one pass for him. So I do want to add this, you know, it was pretty awesome to watch this. And one of the takeaways for me, and I know when Jeff and I first talked about this after he had shared it with Joe, or Joe and him had talked about it, I just couldn't see myself doing that, right? And it's interesting when we think of ourselves as adult writers. And I often tell people this, like, I really struggle to write. Like, I don't consider myself a very good writer. I struggle at it. In fact, it's agonizing to write. And Dan, I think you and I have even talked about this sometimes. And I think it's pretty common amongst people who write. Now, Jeff is very talented and he can push out blog posts pretty quickly, I would say, because he has a skill for it. But people like me and other people, we struggle at it. I can literally spend a half a day or all day just writing one simple blog post, right? And I don't even like it while I'm doing it, but I know every time I finish, I really enjoy it. I can look back and feel really good that I was able to persevere, to really work through that, to overcome all those feelings of anxieties. And I think it's important. It's a great reminder for us as adults who often are asking our kids every day in schools to write, and yet we are the ones who hesitate, right? Like when our kids are in school, we try to encourage them, oh, you can do this. You know, you just do this and do that and you can do this. And sometimes we even get frustrated with our kids that they're not writing enough. But yet we as adults, are we modeling the same type of anxieties and the fears and the things that our kids are struggling with every day? Are we willing to put ourselves out there and be vulnerable and remember what it's like to be a student and remember what it's like to write every day or write in school or write when you have to? So I think it was just a great reminder to watch adults. I mean, these are very talented people, to watch them all struggle. And Jeff is right. They all struggle. You could just watch it. And from an observer, of course, I was relaxed because I didn't have that pressure, which is exactly why I didn't put myself in that situation. But to watch these other people get almost, you know, blocked, right? Like writing block, they and have to go bounce it off ideas. And then it was also cool to watch everybody else, you know, individually, how they work through that themselves, right? Either with other people or going off on their own for a little while. But you could see the stress level from having to do it. But I know every one of them would tell you it was one of the most awesome experiences they've had. So it was cool.
You know, Jimmy, can I throw in, Dan, one more thing? Since we did that project, I've had three different people from three different walks of life reach out to me and say, hey, I'd like to do that. One was our communications public relations person in my former school district, and she said she wants to do that with her Innsbruck community, the professional organization for communications and PR people in schools. And I would encourage people to do that. If I was still at Deerfield, I might do a leadership retreat where the 20 administrators there all wrote for one full day and put together a book, whether it's published or not formally, just to get that together and experience that collaborative writing piece together. But I also say Jimmy gives me too much credit for writing. I don't like writing any more than he does. And I'm not sure I'm any better at it than he is either, to be honest. But I always equate this to running. I've run 13 marathons, but unlike a lot of my running friends, I hate running. I absolutely despise it. There's never a second of it that I enjoy. I can't think of a worse thing to do than run a 26-mile race, yet I keep doing it. And I just hate it. I hate it. But at the end of it, I feel fantastic, and I think of writing the same way. And my last point on that, Jimmy, I talked to a group last week, and I think you do this too. Nowadays, when I ask, are you connected on Twitter, you know, I get quite a few people to say yes. But then I'll ask, how many people are blogging? And I was speaking to maybe, I don't know, 300 people this day, and almost no hands went up. And I think we've really got to change that as educators. We've got to model that. We've got to, you know, because we should be asking our kids to blog. When they're writing for their teacher, that's an audience of one, and they just want that writing to be good enough. When they're writing a blog for the whole wide world, they want that writing to be good. And the more likely that they will do that is the more likely that we are doing that first and modeling that. So I think that's important, that educators blog. And mine are terrible. Jimmy's are terrible. So if we can do it, anybody can do it.
You know, I agree.
Do you agree that ours are terrible?
No, I just agree. I heard Jimmy talk about this earlier this week, and we ask our kids to write all day, every day, and yet we're as adults afraid to put ourselves out there because what are other people going to think about it? And I just think that's just a great message, and it really made me stop and think. So thanks, you guys, for talking about that and talking through the struggles, that it doesn't matter what other people think. It's really just an opportunity to reflect on your learning. So thanks, you guys.
You know, Andrea, I want to share one thing here, and we'll just keep talking about this because I do think it's an interesting topic, right, in terms of that whole idea of it. You know, I still remember George Kuros was the one who pushed me into the writing, the blogging, and I specifically remember saying to him, George, you don't understand. I don't like to write, and I also don't write very well. And I remember he said to me, he said, well, first of all, I'm not sure you understand, but you're writing for yourself, right? That's the first thing you have to understand. Second of all, I didn't say you had to make it public, right? Eventually, do I think it's a good idea to make it public? Yeah, but you don't necessarily have to make it public either. You can still write for yourself. But it was the last thing he said that actually gave me the confidence to write, which is, it's the same words I pass on to other people. And that is, write like you talk. Right, it's not this formal writing that you're going to be writing like someone's going to be inspecting and it's literature and all this stuff. Just write like you talk. Just your message will resonate with somebody. And so that's the same message I try to pass on to others today is write for you, write like you talk, and somebody, your message will resonate. Because it's always interesting that people say to me all the time, well, I don't have anything to say, or, you know, no one cares what I have to say, or I don't have anything profound to say, and why would anyone care what I have to say? You know, all these excuses, right? And I can just imagine teachers going into the classroom every day, right? Or principals going into their building and say, hey, just for the record today, just so you know, I don't have anything to offer. So, you know, it goes back to what Jeff said. You know, I'm just a teacher. I don't have anything to offer. Yes, you do. We all have something to offer. And our message will resonate with someone. And it just takes one person. And it just can quickly remind us every day how important what matters in the work we do every day with kids and other adults. So.
All right. So you guys have, we've talked about a few little maybe upcoming nuggets, but what's in store for the two of you as you continue to move forward?
Moving forward, we'll continue on with a lot of things we're doing. Jimmy and I work together a lot, but we both do our own separate things as well. For me, since I quit full-time work June 30th and retired after 35 years in education, Andrew, I'm really trying to write more and speak more and just try to grow in those areas. Jimmy and I do a little bit of consulting with schools too. We coach principals and teachers, and we've done a little bit of that and love that. Jimmy and I guess another thing we have in common in our careers, we coached athletics for quite a while. And I think coaching athletics is no different than coaching teachers and principals. Some of the, you're practicing, you're providing feedback. So I want to do more and more of that. Obviously, every year I always say this is my last book and I won't write anymore. But then Jimmy and I talk and sure enough, we agree, let's do another. And so we're working on the project right now. And then the conferences, Dan said we would talk about this at the end, but we're trying to vary those up a little bit. In addition to doing the traditional ones we've done that tend to be one or 1.5 or 2 day conferences with 12 or 13 speakers, we're also trying to come up with some targeted ones, for instance, the Des Moines one is one of those in September, where it's just Jimmy and Todd and me, and we're focusing on leadership. So we're calling it a leadership summit, what great educators do differently, leadership summit. And we want to do some one-day quick hitters like that, where we're really focusing in on a specific area of need in education. And this first one will be leadership, but we plan on doing one for special education and one on standards-based grading, and just maybe a little bit more tighter and focused on certain topics.
Let's see, what do I have in store? Well, with, like Jeff said, right now I'm doing a lot of traveling and a lot of speaking and so forth, but honestly, at the end of the day, the thing I love to do more than anything else is coach our principals up. I get worried about our leadership in our country, in the sense that, especially our school leaders, because I feel like if you look pretty consistently across the country, there's all sorts of teacher mentoring programs, teacher induction, support for teachers as they come into the profession. And quite frankly, there's a lot of, you know, Title II funding and professional development money that's available for teachers. But you don't see that across the board consistently with school leaders and district leaders. And I think we have to be careful and recognize that our best people, our principals as well, our leaders, they need to be coached up as well. And they have difficult jobs. And quite frankly, some days I'm sure they question themselves whether it's worth what they're doing. And it is worth what they're doing. We need our best people going into leadership positions, and not the other way around. And so how do we continue to support our leaders and coaching them and so forth? So that's definitely something I want to continue doing. Teaching, obviously, is something that's a passion of mine. I want to continue to teach as much as possible, and whatever that looks like, whether it's at Drake or whether it's in a classroom or it's in a school I'm visiting or whatever happens to be the case, or working with teachers or school leaders. And then I think the last thing is I just want to keep learning, right? I mean, I think that's the thing too, is, you know, we're always evolving. We're never going to have this crazy profession figured out. And anyone who tells you they have figured out is, you know, run the other way, right? So it's this idea of how do we continue to look at ourselves as educators who are constantly learning, constantly teaching, and helping our profession continue to get better and better all the time. And then the last thing I'd probably, you know, would mention is, and I see this happen a lot, is I would encourage our teachers and our school leaders and district leaders to make sure that they're taking care of themselves. It's really hard to bring your best every day when you're not at your best every day. And I know how difficult and how invested our people are and how committed they are, but at the same time, they got to remember that they got to take care of themselves. It's not selfish to take care of themselves. They need to take care of themselves in order to be their best for other people. So when you're in a mindset of an educator who we know is a servant profession and we're giving and giving and giving all the time, we got to take time every now and then to make sure that we're committing back to ourselves and taking care of ourselves in terms of how we eat and whether we're exercising or not. So just remember, 1 hour a day is 4% of your day. So I think everybody deserves 4% for themselves. And if you can't give yourself 4, you should at least give yourself 2, because that would be 30 minutes. So everybody deserves at the minimum at least that.
Jimmy, as far as taking care of yourself, I just got a text from Joe Mazza. He must be watching. He told me to comb my hair. And I'm going to tell Mazza, well, at least I've got hair. I'm like, I don't know
about hair. Yeah, I have no comment there, Joe. So I'm glad he didn't say that to me. I have no comment there. So.
All right, guys, we're going to close up here in just a couple minutes. So the last one we've got for you is a big hitter. And it's, if you could change one thing in the landscape of education, what would that be?
You know, Dan, let me start. And that's a tough question, right? Like, in some ways, there's so much. In some ways, there's so little, because there's so much good happening. But there's obviously so much you'd want to change. For me, it would be an equity issue. And obviously, I'm not the first person to say this, but it continues to be the case, in my opinion, that unfortunately, your zip code determines to some extent your education. And if that's true, I hate that that's true. And I want to do anything in my ability to change that. I've been very fortunate and blessed in my own life, in my own education. And I want everybody to have the options that I had and that my daughter had. And I still fear, and I don't know if you guys think I'm right, but I still fear that there's equity issues in our nation, and that dreaded zip code situation is not just a myth, but a reality. And some children might be doomed to less options in the future than I had in mine or my daughter had in hers because of their zip code. And I just hate it. I don't have the answer to it. I just know that it's important to me, and I'd like to speak out about it whenever I can. So if I could change some of the equity issues in our schools, I think that's the one thing I would change.
Well, that was a great answer, Jeff. So I would concur with all that as well. So, you know, I've been thinking about this one a lot lately too, obviously with all the things going on in our country right now. And it's just sad every day, you know, when you turn on a television, you see another school shooting somewhere. And so, I think one of the things when I think about that, and I just go back to, I was fortunate enough in a couple of different schools that I worked at that had some really, really, really wonderful community and resources that were available. And so when I think about that, I think, why is that even an option? Why is that a choice? Why can't we somehow figure out how school districts can work with their local communities, who work within our local areas, our state organizations, and hopefully even our federal organizations? Is why is it even an option anymore today that we don't have partnerships, whether it's healthcare or dental or mental health experts or substance abuse or police liaisons, school social workers, Department of Human Services? I mean, I just go on and on and on. Juvenile probation, right? Why are these things even a choice anymore? And it kind of goes along with what Jeff said in terms of equity. There are some schools who are fortunate to have some of those and partner with some of those. But imagine if all of our schools had all of those resources within our organizations, within our buildings, within our community. I do think that would serve our teachers and serve our communities in such a different way, but yet such a really unique way, where constantly every kid had access to dental, right, care, to health care, to substance abuse. I mean, all these things, and not just our kids, but quite frankly, you know, even our staff who need some of this. You know, it's funny how when we have these incidents, I would always remember, you know, as a school principal, when we have a death of a student or we have some accident or something that was in crisis mode for our schools, is, you know, all the adults would just invest so much in our kids. But we'd have to remember, like, well, who's taking care of the adults in these moments, right? You know, when they lose a student or lose a colleague, it's no different. So why do we, you know, how do we recognize that these things are so important to our profession and to our kids and the work that we do every day? So I think that would be the one thing that I would advocate for.
Excellent. Well, you know what? We're going to start wrapping up here shortly, but I want to share some resources with our viewers. If you have not followed Jimmy and Jeff yet on Twitter, you can find Jimmy at Casas_Jimmy and at Jeff_Zuhl. And then Jimmy's website, jimmycasas.com, and jeffrey.zuhl.blogspot.com. And then I shared the link to the What Connected Educators Do Differently website on the Twitter feed. But in case you missed it, connectedd.org is where you can find that. And there's a list of upcoming events for you to peruse. So thanks you guys so much for being here. I'm going to give you guys, you can fight over who wants to go first, just a brief minute to give a closing message to our viewers.
Jimmy, go ahead, buddy, and then I'll go.
Sorry, I was looking at the Twitter feed here. You caught me, Andrea. I was looking at the Twitter feed. So can you repeat the question? I apologize.
I just got a closing message from you, Jimmy.
Oh, just a closing message.
Just a real
yes.
quick closing
How about
message.
This? Continue to live your life every day with a sense of passion, a sense of purpose, and a sense of pride. And remember to live your excellence every day. Don't just talk about it, but live it. How's that?
I'll end my day tonight the way I start my day every morning. Every morning, my first tweet every single morning is work hard, have fun, be nice today. Andrea, Dan, if we have schools in which kids and teachers are working hard, having fun, and being nice to each other each and every day, we have pretty darn good schools. That's not rocket science, but I think that's truth. And those are the kind of school communities I like to be a part of, and I enjoy seeing that. So, Dan, Andrea, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. And I make fun of my buddy a lot here, but he's one of the best in the business. I respect him a great deal, and it's always fun to see him in person or when he's in wherever the heck he is tonight.
That's because I'm the little brother, because I'm a lot younger than he is. Even though I don't have any hair, I'm still younger than he is. Just remember that.
Looking at this, that you're younger
As I look out my window here in Hopping Rapids City, South Dakota, it's the place to be right now. I'm going to tell you that. It's the place to be. So, no, thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Dan. And it's always a pleasure. Anytime I get an opportunity to spend time with this guy, I take advantage of it. I've learned a tremendous amount from him and others in our profession. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day, is the relationships that we form in this crazy, crazy world. So thank you so much, the two of you, too. You guys are awesome. Love you both.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, guys. Awesome stuff tonight. We really appreciate you being here. I am going to wrap up with some upcoming Iowa regional and national events. So we've got a bunch this time. First off, April 7th, Ed Camp Iowa is going to be taking place. We will have some more information coming to you soon on that. Coming up on April 3rd and 4th at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines is the Iowa One-to-One Institute, always a great conference. You may want to check that one out if you are not registered for that. The Iowa ASCD Curriculum Academy, April 19th and 20th. This is going to be held in Ankeny with special guest Peter DeWitt. Peter has been an Iowa Ed Chat live guest before. Peter's got some great stuff. Again, April 19th and 20th in Ankeny. Then for What Great Educators Do Differently conference is coming up here. So in Nashville, Tennessee, April 13th and 14th, Houston, Texas on April 17th, San Diego, California on May 11th, and then in Virginia on August 3rd. And then later on, ladies and gentlemen, on September 14th, Jimmy Casas, Jeff Zoll, Todd Whitaker are going to be coming to West Des Moines, Iowa, September 14th. For the What Great Educators Do Differently with a Leadership Summit, as they are calling it. That should be tremendous to have this coming to Iowa, guys. So you will want to stay tuned for that. This summer, KPEC, Keystone's Premier Education Conference, Breaking Barriers, coming up on June 18th and 19th in my hometown of Dubuque, Iowa. That's a great conference. And then save the date for Benton Community Ed Camp, focused on teacher leadership, taking place on June 21st, special guest Ryan Wise, our director of education, will be there. If you've got regional, local, national events that you want us to highlight on this show, get them to us, and we will certainly shoot those out via Twitter and on this live video stream as well. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing everything tonight on Iowa Ed Chat Live. So great to learn with all of you, and we are on every Sunday, every last Sunday of the month on this live show format. So you'll want to check us out next month. We are having Jennifer Gonzalez joining us. She is going to rock it. Also, a very special guest, thank you to our guests tonight, Jimmy Casas and Jeff Zoll. And on behalf of Andrea and myself, we want to thank you for being here with us. Be sure to follow some of the friends that you met here tonight on Iowa Ed Chat Live. Continue the conversation. And you can also find a great deal of resources on our website. That's at tinyurl.com/IAEdChat. We're going to be back next week with another regular Iowa Ed Chat Twitter chat. So until that time, be the change. Good night, everybody.